need a bigger boat.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Life, finds a way.
Welcome back to Spielberg Chronologically. This is the podcast where for the next few weeks, we're going to go through every single one of Steven Spielberg's movies in chronological order. My name is Jeff. With me is my co-host, Eric.
Hey, how's it going, Jeff?
It's going well, man. I woke up in the morning. What else do you want?
Got yourself a gun?
Why do I need a gun?
Sopranos. Woke up this morning, got myself a gun. No,
so is
not
it
going to
be bad
guy.
If I've never watched The Sopranos?
No,
it's just not.
No,
not for.
We're just gonna slide right past it. Like,
great, excellent. Okay, so this week we watched a movie I've been dreading, Ready Player One from 2018, pre-pandemic, seems like forever ago. Starring Ty Sheridan, Olivia Cooke, Ben Mendelsohn, Lena Waithe, T.J. Miller, Simon Pegg, and of course the returning Mark Rylance.
Yeah, man, quite the cast on this, and it's funny because like a lot of the people in this movie, I recognized, but I couldn't quite place them. Right, like Olivia Cooke, like I'm like, oh, I know her. I really know her. And
Bates Motel, the TV series, that's where I know her from.
Okay,
where I was introduced to her.
Yeah, I know her from the new season of Game of Thrones, among other things. Like she's in a lot of stuff. But yeah. It's funny because until I looked it up, and even then I was looking at it, and I was like, was she in Game of Thrones? Who was she? And she's like one of the primary people in Game of Thrones. Like she's such an asshole in that show. And so that was fun. And H, what was the name of the woman who plays H?
Lena Waithe.
Yeah, she's on Master of None. And I looked her up too because I recognized her and then I knew it was from Master of None. But man, she's like a big time producer. Like she produces lots of films and TV shows, like really hardcore successful. Like I had no idea this person like had this amazing career. I just knew her from this one show. And some of the other folks too in the movie.
Ty Sheridan,
Mud. I knew him from Mud.
Shitty Cyclops.
He's Shitty Cyclops. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those newer X-Men movies, which increase in shittiness as they go after Days of Future
Past.
But
always have like one little bright spot, right? Like just one little thing like, oh, this could have been good. Like
Quicksilver.
Psylocke. I thought like Psylocke for a moment. I'm like, oh, they could. She's dead. You know, like, and anyway, we're not talking about that movie maybe at some point. But I saw this in theaters the weekend it came out because I've read the book twice at the time. I think I've read it three times now. And was a fan of the source material. So I had to go check it out. And I sat in the theater. And as soon as you find out the first challenge is a race with cars, I was like, shit.
Okay.
I just was like, crap. It just like, damn it.
So I'm guessing that you saw this in the theater and then never saw it again until this.
No,
viewing.
I watched it again.
You did watch it again.
It was on like some free streaming thing. And I was like, the last two times go in, I've tried to be like, all right, you know what? Let me take the book. Put it to the side, right?
Yes.
Let me watch this as a blank canvas, as someone who doesn't know the source material. It's hard to separate that. I still didn't like it, but anyway, what about you?
Yeah, so I also had read the book two times before seeing this film. Also really enjoyed the book. It's funny because that book, like, there's been some backlash, you know, like it was originally like, oh, this is a great book and we all love this book and everybody needs to read this book. And then it kind of has turned into like, oh, the writing of this book is kind of shitty. And it's just a list of references. And, the zeitgeist on the book it's kind of like turned. But I still really enjoy the book.
I agree that it has turned, but I think a lot of it might be the sequel or like there are people who read it. Like I have friends who read it and didn't enjoy it. Fair enough. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I still think the original book is really good. I think the characters are good. I think the world is developed and interesting. And yes, it's filled with references, but I felt like the story was good enough to pull me through, and the references were like a nice little bonus.
The thing about that book is that it's propulsive. Like, it is one of those things where, like, you get into it, and it's just a page turner, man. You are just glued to that damn thing until you get to the end of it. You know, like, it is really, really, it just moves from one thing into the next.
It is a tremendously fun read.
Yes, agreed.
It's a blast, and
so
the sequel sucks, but
the sequel is a bum out. You know, it has a few moments, but it's a bum out enough that I hardly even remember it 6 months after reading it. Right? I also enjoyed the book. I went into this. I did not have as unfavorable an experience as you did. I think on my first time watching this, it's about what I said about when I saw Jurassic World. Like, okay, that was like a movie, right? And much like my Jurassic World experience for the podcast, when I watched it yesterday or day before yesterday, can't remember when, I got into it, man. Like, I was into it. I really enjoyed it this time on all sorts of levels. Like, I don't know. I went with it. I kind of like, I did what you talked about and set the book to the side, and I just went with it. And I really had a good time. Like I'm definitely on the positive side on this movie. And I was never on the negative side, you know, like I was like, okay, you know, but now I'm like, I really like this. Like, I'm going to watch it again. Like, I'm going to watch it with my kids, you know, like it's fun.
I think here on my third viewing, it's actually the worst I've felt about the film.
Wow.
Like I really didn't like it in the theaters. I watched it the second time. I'm like, okay, maybe it's not that bad, and maybe if you come in from the outside, this time I'm like, damn, oh, this could. And I think for me, the big thing is the lost promise that Ready Player One could have been. And I won't say if it was in the hands of a better director, because there aren't many better. But if there was in the hands of someone who cared and understood the source material more, or it has a track record of doing this. So for me, if I'm making this film and I'm hiring a director, I want Edgar Wright to do this. And I want it to look and feel like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, to kind of have that fun element to it. I feel like he kind of maybe goes too serious in parts. And because at the end of the day, this is a movie about kids playing a video game, it kind of gets cringy for me in several points. Like when they get to meet everybody, right, in the real world, which in the book is kind of like a big deal. When he meets H, when Parzival, our main character, meets H for the first time, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And this, it is like, hey, it's me, H. Oh, and then they move on. And in the book, you know, because H portrays herself as a male in the Oasis, and then when they meet, she's not a white male, but a black woman who's a lesbian, and just kind of sets Parzival back a second. And then he's like, well, it doesn't actually matter. And it's just this great sort of like the first time you meet someone on the internet. Like, if you ever have done that, you know, like actually taken time to go and meet someone you've met on the internet. And I really appreciated that. And then, like, his whole crush on Artemis and that working out was all there. I forgot where I was going with this, but I just really felt like that element was kind of not as strong as it could have been.
So you had issues with the relationship between the characters.
I had that. And then a lot of the dialogue is balls salad. There is the one line for me, where I want to choke myself.
Is it a fanboy knows a hater? Because that was terrible.
What? Oh, when he's talking to Sorrento?
Yeah.
But thank you for pointing more out, is when they meet Sho. And he's like, yes, I'm 13. And he goes, no, you're the most badass 13-year-old in the world, or some shit like that. so stupid. Like, I just, and really, in the book, Sho, who I believe is called Shoto in the book, is actually dead at this point. So he's just here to be a kid, I guess. I don't know.
I thought Daito died. I don't know. I don't remember. It's been a long time.
So Daito's character dies in the final battle.
Okay.
I could. Maybe I'm mixing it up. But I think he doesn't die for real. His character dies. But that's the other thing. So at the final sequence, we're jumping right to the end here. Daito, they're in this big battle. Daito's there meditating for like 30 minutes while everyone is shooting and fighting. And then finally he wakes up and calls upon his droid, his mech from Mobile Suit Gundam. And he goes down and he gets destroyed anyway from Mechagodzilla and has no effect on the battle. He loses right away. Why? Just like so stupid.
Sometimes things just don't go the way you plan.
When the movie sets it up, like, you're going to see some shit. Daito's going to open up a can of whoop ass here, and then he just loses. So let's talk about the references, right? Because that's a big part of the book. It's the thing everybody says about the book. And so one of the things is when the book was made, I believe the writer said, I wrote this knowing that it couldn't be adapted because of all the IP that's in it. And you can do things in book form that you can't do in film. And yet they still kind of found a way through, which is something that's WB, Warner Brothers has done several times now with like Lego Batman and Space Jam, where they bring in all this IP from their back catalog and kind of cram it into things. This was the first one. And I wonder if like this caused them to think about that. I don't know. But I think they did a pretty good job of getting enough referenciness to not feel like they were shoehorned into what they could and could not add.
Yes, absolutely. Like, and I know it must have taken a tremendous amount of work. And it's like, let's not even put it in the same sentence with that goddamn Space Jam, the newer Space Jam, because
newer Space Jam is one of the worst films ever made.
It is just horrifying, right? Like, and it's like a bunch of people in shitty costumes that look like they were made in somebody's garage, dressed up as various WB characters characters.
The Pennywise, the shitty Halloween costume Pennywise.
It's so shitty. Like, it is so, so shitty. And like, this definitely, like, treats the characters better. There's definitely a wider variety. There's characters from all over, you know? Like, there's the video
game
characters.
And some of them are here and gone in a blip.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Hello Kitty. I saw Hello Kitty in there. Like, there's all sorts of, like, tons and tons of stuff like hiding in there. Overwatch and, you know, Halo and, you know, all sorts of cool video game references, lots of cool movie references, not just from the 80s, although it primarily is focused, you know, on the 80s.
And so many of them are just in the background to make the world alive, right?
Yes.
There's the moment where Freddy Krueger gets killed. It's like, oh, Freddy. Oh, he's dead. Like, it's just that kind of fast.
Yeah, yeah. Battletoads, like, it's endless.
Oh, yeah.
It's endless how many, like, cool and obscure references there are. Like, even the Bigfoot truck that H drives, like, I loved that was there. And I don't remember if it was in the book or not, but, you know, I was like, just this instant moment of recognizable and, like, oh, I haven't thought about that shit for years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, years since I thought of that thing. The mad ball that he throws into... one of them throws a mad ball, and you might not even remember these because you were just like,
I don't know,
real little kid. It's a little face thing that explodes in the final battle.
Okay, because I had seen those. That looked familiar, but I couldn't really place it in my mind.
It was a toy fad in the 80s for like a month, right? It was like
I think I even had one.
Yeah. I really thought they did an extraordinary job just kind of building all of that out. And I can see why some people would think that it was overload and that it was just kind of trite and tiring or whatever, you know, just, you know, but I don't feel like this movie is a game of
Ooh, look.
Member berries, right? Like the did you see the South Park member berries episode? Or
I don't know.
Like people eat these berries and they're like, member, you remember this? Remember that? I didn't feel like this was that, you know? I thought that it was a little more thoughtful and well done. You know, like online communities like this exist right now. And people do create avatars of the weirdest shit, you know? Like, you go into VR chat and you're in there talking to Woody Woodpecker. You know, like, it's just weird shit that people go for. And so I thought that all of that was really, really cool.
I like the chest burster coming out of Goro. That's something you never thought you'd see in film.
Right.
And we got that, right?
Right.
I did appreciate that because there are two franchises I'm a fan of, and it was just like in a brief moment, and they don't dwell on it, which I think helps.
Right.
Yes. None of the references get dwelled on too heavily other than a couple. So I'll talk about my favorite part of the movie, and it's one that is from the book, but they choose a different film probably for rights reasons. In the book, the second challenge is they have to reenact kind of word for word from memory the film War Games. And in this movie, they go into a movie and the goal's different, but they do The Shining. And the sequence in The Shining is my favorite part of the movie. I'm not even a Shining fan, but I really just appreciated them walking through that world, you know, experiencing those things. No one person not knowing the film and not knowing, don't mess with that elevator, run away from the twin girls. Like, I liked all of that. You know, H goes into the bathroom where the dead woman comes out of the bathtub, and you know, that happens, and it's fun. I liked that.
Yeah, I can't tell you how loudly I howled in the theater when I didn't know that was coming, and they like go into the Overlook Hotel and spend so much time in there. Like, the moment I realized what was happening, I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I was so into that. And it's probably one of the bigger things that sold me on the movie the first time I saw it. Like, everything about it is perfect. The film grain changes. I don't know if you were watching it on a monitor where you could tell, but like, the grain of the film goes from like digital glossiness to like 1970s grain. Like,
good.
It is amazing. And like everything, the carpet, you see the tricycle in the background, you got the twin girls, the whole scene in room 237. And, you know, like, there's a lot of material to cover in The Shining. And of course, this is like a,
it's like a 10-minute sequence.
It's like a 10-minute sequence, yeah. And it's like an interpretation of The Shining. You know, obviously they didn't get Jack Nicholson's rights, you know, likeness rights, so they substituted.
He's kind of shrouded in shadow when you do get to see him.
Yeah, yeah. So when somebody's wielding the axe, it's the lady from room 237 or whatever. Yeah. It totally works. Like, it's absolutely fine. And I just loved it. I just absolutely loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And then it goes into the segment where the ghosts are like dancing, which they're like, this isn't in The Shining. And no, it's not. It's not in The Shining.
Yeah.
But it's kind of reminiscent of the Haunted Mansion at Disney World, which is also amazing. It's my favorite thing at Disney World. Every time I go to Disney World or Disneyland, I make a point of going in there.
You have to.
Yeah, because it's so cool. Like, and it was done in what, like 1958? And it's still like, oh my God, how did they do this? You know, like, I remember seeing that for the first time in real life. And so seeing that kind of represented in the movie in a referential sort of way, it was fantastic. Like, I think that sequence is amazeballs. Like, amazing, yeah. Amazing. So yes, I'm with you. Probably my favorite part of the movie as well.
Now, how did you feel about Mark Rylance in this film?
I love Mark Rylance in this film. I okay. love him. And I know, like, you have beef. I know you have beef. And so I'm watching it this time, like, thinking the entire time, like, why is Jeff hating this character? Like, what?
Hi. If you're watching this, I'm dead. Jabba, jabba, jabba.
Oh, I think that's...
I wish we could go back. Just go back as fast as possible.
That's why. He's that tone in every scene, and it's just feel like I'm watching him read his lines, and I did not like it.
I know introverted tech guys that are like that, though.
Probably true, right? And I'm just saying.
I read the Variety, the review in Variety this morning, and it described his performance as spooked angel. And I was like, oh, that's just about perfect, because he is spooked. He's like afraid of everything. Like he can't relate to people. He can't, you know, like the whole point of the movie is that his biggest regret was that he wasn't able to connect with other people, and he severed the connections that he did have in order to live in this weird fantasy world, right? Like, and this is something that he's not entirely proud of or happy about, right? And so I think in that way, kind of just portraying him in like, he's almost like cringing away from the other characters when he talks to him. Not literally, but you can see it in the performance, right? Yeah. Like, it's an effort for him to like even talk or make words, you know, and he's bewildered by the world around him and the way people interact and so on. I loved it. I thought it was great. Like, I just really
I can't argue with that, because he is awkward, and just I just felt like when I saw the trailers, even I'm like, oh, just it pained me to watch. And perhaps I didn't understand the performance.
I mean, think of like these big tech guys. Like, think of Zuckerberg, right? Like,
right.
That dude's a weird robot, right? Like, he's a strange data Android person. And like, some of these guys that are like the really big tech guys, they're just like on another level. Like, they're just on a plane of their own, you know? On a microcosm. Like, I've worked with guys like this too, you know? Like, Yeah, I've worked with people who are very withdrawn to the point where it's like painful for them to like talk to other people, you know? And I like the performance.
I will pull a Rufio and concede. You've turned me around on it.
Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Play the Rufio card.
There are other good things. This movie, it by no means is just a full shit show from start to finish. It is not 1941. There are other good things. I love Ben Mendelsohn in this movie. He is a great villain. I think he has that corporate ruthlessness down. He just kind of is a jerk at all times. I really liked him in this movie.
Like, outside of when he starts killing people, I understand this character, right? Like, I understand this guy's motivation. So he's like the second place person, and the idiot that runs the first place company left this wide open for anybody to come in and solve this riddle and just take his shit, right? Like, and so of course this guy is gonna obsess on, oh my god, I can have the number one and the number two, I will be unstoppable and just live on a mountain of money and, you know, frosting. Yeah, like, of course he's gonna like throw every resource he has at getting this done, you know. So like, the character motivation there is very clear. He's also a person who does not enjoy the Oasis, and it's fun watching him like have to engage with it and not like it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the scene, like, he comes off so false in that scene where he's got the guy, like, he's talking to Parzival, and he's got the guy in his ear, like, giving him the references. Like, I just want to throw on Duran Duran and play Robotron. And it's, like, it's the most, like, unbelievable false thing, you know, on the face of the earth, because this guy just clearly just hates it all. Like, he just hates it. And so that is very fun as well. It's a fun performance, you know?
Yeah. And then despite being canceled, we'll not get into The Human, but I did like I-Rock, played by TJ Miller, who has been canceled, but
has he? He's, I don't know.
Kinda. I like his sort of, my only regret is that after he died, they didn't cut to him in the real world being some 400-pound fat guy, you know, because he's this character who's played so many hours and he's, you know, got all of this stuff. He is the whaler of the Oasis. He spent all this money and he's got all these things. And I just wanted to cut back to him being a lowlife.
Yeah. I'm not terribly familiar with what happened with him, and like I know he's like,
sexual. He got me too'd.
Did he? And bomb threats. He did weird shit. I think the guy's just kind of has some mental issues as well. But I will say I did enjoy him in this. I also enjoy him in Big Hero 6. I enjoy him in Cloverfield.
Deadpool.
Yeah, he's a fun screen presence. So, and not being terribly familiar, you know, to get. That is what it is. But in this movie, I thought he was a hoot. Yes.
Yeah. And then finally, Simon Pegg, who's barely in the film. You don't necessarily realize it's him as the curator. But they do show him early in the film as Ogden Morrow. And then again at the end in some kind of... Now, I watched this on a little computer monitor. And I could still tell how bad the makeup was. Did it jump out to you, his old man makeup?
No, I thought he looked okay. But I wasn't necessarily paying too much attention to it either. It's not like some of the other films where the old person makeup has really jumped out, you know? I thought he generally looked okay. And I'm always just happy to see Simon Pegg show up and shit. And so,
oh, me too. He's close, not quite, but he's close to that Jack Black level for me, where I'm like, woohoo, yay!
Yeah, he's definitely in like the beloved column,
yeah,
right? Like when he shows up, I'm like, woohoo, yay! So,
Olivia Cooke. Now, okay, another moment in the trailer, because I'll tell you, I went into the theater already knowing there were red flags for me as a fan of the book. And there's a scene in the trailer where they show Olivia Cooke talking to Wade, who is Barzival, and saying, "Welcome to the Resistance, Wade." And I was like, fuck. Like, there is no resistance in the book. What is this? You know, and
well, there's
she
no
definitely...
real resistance in the movie either. Like, it's
there's
all...
like three, four people.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Resistance.
It's like that dude with tattoos on his face and her and a couple people kind of shuffling around in the background. Like, there's no real resistance portrayed in this movie. It's just lip service, you know, like you're supposed to assume that the resistance is whack. Like, it is definitely weak sauce. And that whole segment that takes place there, which is clearly just there so they can meet in real life earlier in the story, it doesn't work very well, particularly when IOI pops in and she shoves him in the hatch and says, "I'm going to slow them down," and then does nothing but stand there and get arrested. Like, they're it's not great. And the resistance is nonsense. So, yes, I'm with you on that.
I think she's fine in the film. Nothing to write home about, but nothing to complain about either.
Yeah, I think as Artie, like when she's definitely much more lively when they're in the thing, you know, like she kind of.
Yeah, I imagine they did like full mocap with these, and so that's them performing.
Yeah,
their CG characters.
Yeah, so I think she's definitely more like just energetic and sprightly, you know, while they're in the thing. I also think that she has that important moment where he decides that he's in love with her, and she's like, "Whoa, dude. Whoa, like, you don't know me. You don't know who I am. You don't know what I look like."
She's the smart one, right?
She's the smart one because he's an idiot. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
That's the other thing. And he's an idiot in the book. I can't even blame the movie. That scene is like right out of the book. Like, you idiot. Like, you don't know me. I'm falling for you. No, you're 16 and you just are feeling all these emotions. Stop it. Like, stop it.
Yeah, like, I don't have a problem at all with two teenagers falling in love, quote, that quickly. Like,
right.
I've been in situations where I was like, I'm at camp for a week with this girl, and I love her more than anything in the world. You know, like, yeah. Like, I've been in that, like, intense teenage situation. And so, like, I buy it. I buy the fact that they could, quote, fall in love really quickly that.
I don't, my only problem with him is or at least with that, is that it is stupid. However, he is stupid and it makes sense, right? So it didn't like well, whatever. Not like watching Love is Blind, where 20 minutes in they're like, "Oh, let's get married." Anyway, that's a great show. You should check it out. Finally, Ty Sheridan, who I think to me lacks a lot of charisma. and he is the lead in the film, and he's probably one of my biggest problems because he has so much screen time, and he is kind of a down-to-earth, regular sort of dude.
Yeah.
Which I think is what the character is. But in a movie, I need a little more oomph. I need something. Like we talked about pretty much every other character, they have something about them that oozes that charisma. And this guy just doesn't. He's vanilla ice cream to me. And I think that hurts the film.
He, like her, is definitely more interesting when they're in the thing, you know, in the Oasis. I think, in general, like, his character goes through an arc, but it's not exactly expressed all that well. It's essentially, I'm going to adopt the values of this girl I like, right? Because when he's first, like, trying to go after the egg, it's all about, like, I'm going to be rich, I'm going to have these sweet guns, I'm going to buy this haptic suit, you know, like, I'm going to, like, buy a house. It's going to be awesome and so great. And that's what his motivation is. And then, like, towards the end of the movie, he shifts, you know, and he's all about, like, keeping the evil corporation out of, you know, out of the Oasis and making it more democratic and free for everyone and so on. But they don't really show that shift happening, right? Like, it's just, he just goes from I want to be rich to I want to free the Oasis, you know, and so it feels a little disjointed and off kilter in that way. I don't know. Did you see any moment where you could, like, point to it and say, like, that's when he changes? Because
the only thing I can think of is when she rejects him. He's like, all right, fine, I'm on board with your rebellion then.
Right.
What's your phone number, girl?
Right.
Like, that's the closest thing I could put up. Like, he just, yeah. And like I said, there is no charisma to this guy. There wasn't in all the films we mentioned before. His cyclopsing is not that great. Like, I just kind of wanted a little more, right? And you can be awkward and teenagery, a la Michael Cera, and still kind of have something to give us from your acting. I just really kind of wish that we got that here, because he's just kind of bland.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, I didn't feel that negatively towards him, but he is definitely, like, portrayed as, like, a schlub in the real world, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a poor kid who lives in this thing. He's not super attractive. Like, the only thing that he really has going for him is that he's a super fan and he's memorized all these facts, right? Like,
yeah,
he's not great at combat. He's not great at, you know, he's like, always running out of money in the Oasis. And his big thing is that he's just a fan of all these things. So, yeah, as far as the performance goes, he's kind of a cipher anyhow, right? Like, he's supposed to represent all the video game and movie fans in the world. So, like, the fact that
we all are kind of this bland, aren't we?
Yeah, the fact that he's a little, like, slatey, I don't know, it's okay with me. Like, it's all right.
Yeah. So, they did keep some things from the book. Primarily the final challenge of them doing adventure,
yes,
and finding the Easter egg in adventure. It was right out of the book. Now, I kind of question the people who are there, like all the gunters, which is their term for people who know the 80s, watching him, the 1/6er, that's the name they have for the IOI guys, the bad people, play adventure. Like, the whole thing is every time they start a game, after what, 5 minutes or whatever, the ice under them breaks and that's it. And so they're like, okay, it's not that game, and they move on. Well, adventure, they're playing it, and after the 5 minute mark, they haven't lost yet. Like, oh, okay, we found the right game. And the guy beats the game, falls through the ice, and like, well, I guess that's it. But even there's the one redheaded sixer, she's like, not sixer, but Gunter's like, yeah, it's got that Easter egg in it, when she's talking about the game initially, and they don't even try to go for it.
Right.
It's so stupid.
They did not make the connection. Yeah. Well, I think there was that scene where she's trying to like talk to people and they're kind of disregarding her a little bit.
Yeah.
I did like the way that they kind of portrayed those guys as just fans as well. That happened.
That are just making money.
They're just making money. Yeah. They just got a job, you know? and so they're totally, you know, by the time he wins, they're totally on board with his win, you
right.
know? Like they're just trying to solve the puzzle. They just happen to be getting paid for it, you know.
Well, and I think even to a degree they know they're working for the bad guys, right?
Yeah.
You know, but this world is a dystopia, and so them actually having a place to go and wear nice clothes and have a job is putting them above the bulk of the rest of society at this point, you know.
Right, right. We all know how miserable Columbus, Ohio is.
Yeah, I don't.
So
but you do.
I am in Columbus, Ohio, and it's funny because there is so little of Columbus, Ohio in this movie, and they just keep talking about the fact that it's Columbus, Ohio. And there's one shot when they're up on the roof where you can kind of see a bit of the Columbus skyline, like in the background,
yeah.
And it's real ish, you know, the IOI building's like plopped in the middle of it. And in the opening, when they're first showing the stacks, I was kind of looking at the skyline in the background, like, is it? Nah, you know, I don't know. It's like hard to tell because you don't know what angle they're coming at it from and so on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm always amused by the fact that it takes place in Columbus because there's really like zero reason for it. Like there's no reason for it to be not in Chicago or,
Philadelphia,
or just wherever, you know.
Maybe the author's from there and you write what you know so it can feel authentic and that's why it got placed there.
Well,
you know,
the book, there are more references. There are more correct references to Columbus. He like names like street names and stuff like that. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, okay. But yeah, in the movie, it's just like, all right, whatever, dude.
We're in Columbus.
Other than it gets a little cheer at the movie theater. It's Columbus, Ohio. Yay!
Yay! I'm from there. That was like Mark on my other podcast. He was watching Parenthood, and there's a scene in Parenthood that's filmed at the University of Florida near where I live. And I was like, be sure to look out for the tower. You'll see it. Yay. That's where we live. So, yeah.
Fun. So talking about the dystopian aspects of this movie, it's really miserable. Like, this is a sad movie, you know, like the setting of this movie is sad. And for such an action packed, bright and cheerful movie, it's like really a bummer. Like essentially the whole concept of the movie is that reality is so miserable and
yeah.
so awful that people have given up trying to save it. They're just letting the world slide down the shitter into oblivion. And instead, they're all just occupying themselves with amusements, right? Like, they're just, like, the whole of civilization has given up. There's no Earth Day. There's no, like, we're recording this on Earth Day. There's no Earth Day. There's no, you know, Environmental Protection Agency. There's none of that. Everybody's just hanging out in this fake world all the time, right? Like they've just abandoned. And
but
the whole point of the movie is let's save the fake world because it's so important to us because the real world is so shitty, right? Like they're not trying to save the real world. They're not out there like stopping the oil barons from dumping in the rivers. No, they're saving the fake world from too much advertising. Like, that's the stakes, right? We don't want a bunch of banner ads in our face while we're in Minecraft world, you know? Like, and it's so funny that, like, it's life or death stakes in this movie for these people, and that's what it's all about, you know? They're, like, to hell with reality. Like, we're in this thing, and this is what it's all about, you know? It's like it's funny.
I'd never made that connection that they're just trying to save the fake world. It is one of those things where I feel like in the book, I was more on board with how evil IOI was and the things they wanted to do, and how important it was for them to be stopped.
But at the end of the day, it is just a game, right? You know, and if they took over, whoop-de-doo. But I live in the real world. But I just, I did feel like it in the book, it felt like the stakes were higher. Like I bought it a little more, the need to win. And I think it's because of the evil things that Sorrento does.
Well, Sorrento does evil things. And it's funny because, like, Parzival's Wade's only real relative left in the world gets killed like a third of the way through the movie, halfway through the movie, and he doesn't ever even mention it again. Like
he doesn't in the book really either.
Yeah, like, he has a moment, like the real world matters so little to this kid that when his like actual aunt gets murdered, he's just like, well, now I gotta find someplace else to put my headset on, you know. Like that's it, that's the repercussion. Because his
life
his,
actually kind of in the book, it's better for him because he finds the key and then he gets like, so in this world, the real world currency is probably worthless, but the in-game currency you can exchange for real life goods and services. So in the book, he gets an apartment and he gets a really sweet rig to hook up to the Oasis. And his life actually kind of gets a little bit better after the explosion.
Right.
There's a sequence in the book that I really like, but a friend of mine, I asked him to read the book, and he read the book and really enjoyed it, but he didn't like this part where Wade purposefully goes into debt and gets himself captured by IOI to work in their loyalty centers, which is essentially a way to pay off your debt through work, but through various mathematical means, you're never actually going to get out of debt. Doing you're essentially an indentured servant for life. And he goes in and he works tech support. And I liked, of course, I worked in tech support, you know, so I kind of related to him in, you know, talking to people who didn't know how to use a computer all day. And he used it as a way to get into the system and crack some codes and set up for the finale where he was eventually going to win. And I really liked that sequence because it showed him being really smart and not just, hey, I've memorized the Holy Grail, but actually smart and adept and thinking three or four steps ahead. And they didn't do that in this movie. Instead, it's Artemis who gets captured, like you said, when she closes that gate and just waits to get arrested. She goes into the loyalty center and she's able to use that to kind of help in the final battle and all. But I understand why they changed it, because that sequence is actually kind of long in the book. And to tell that tale properly would require more screen time than they wanted to give up. But it is a scene I kind of was like, I get it, but
yeah. I remember that part of the book. I'm guessing they also did it to give Artemis a little more to do, right? Yeah. Like, she is a hero in the movie. In that sequence, like, she endangers herself. She goes in there. She shuts down the orb. She's in the Oasis fighting the battle. Like, but in the real world, she's among the enemy, like, strapped in among the enemy.
I really like that sequence. I think that was a great idea to have her being in, like, jumping from Sixer rig to Sixer rig so she could be one of the bad guys on the ground, but actually be a good person that infiltrated them. I thought that was really smart, and kind of one of the fun parts.
Yeah. It's just, the whole sequence is pretty slick when she's kind of sneaking around and going around. She used that little pod thing to save the spell to the orb and everything. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. So she saves the day, right? They would have never gotten through the force field without her. She's Luke Skywalker taking down the force field around the Death Star. You know, like she's the hero. He just solves a puzzle. She's out there risking life and limb.
Yeah.
You know, he's in a van solving a puzzle with an Atari joystick. Right. So yeah, it's cool. Like, I do think that the bit with the van kind of getting sideswiped and stuff towards the end,
where he's trying to get the key in.
Yeah. Maybe a little unnecessary, right? Like, we've already had the in-game climax, you know, and that just adds, it's just there to add some extra tension to the scene, I think. As is the lady, like, assassin character. I don't know if she
was out of nowhere. I don't recall her from my readings of the book.
I don't think she's in the book, and I don't know if she really needs to be in the movie either. Like,
I agree. She doesn't do enough to really justify any character development or anything. Like, it's weird. I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that they could have gotten rid of her. But I don't know. Overall, like, I mean, I do have these small little critiques about it, but I really enjoy the film. I think it's good, man. And I think, like, some of the themes in it are really interesting, you know? Like, you can just take it as a surface level, you know, fun video game, you know? But, I mean, looking at it deeper, it's like, man, this is kind of a miserable movie, you know? Like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about the way it uses the idea of catfishing as a plot point?
In the book, it's like my favorite part. Like, when he meets H in the real world, it's one of my favorite parts of the book.
Yeah.
And she explains, hey, you know, in the book, she's heavy set, you know, black woman, lesbian. And she's like, and you get treated different. And so when I went into... Now, in the movie, she's kind of this, like, orc-looking character, so there's really no representation of race. But if I remember correctly, in the book, she's a straight white guy, right? And wants all the benefits that go with being a straight white guy. And then when they finally meet, you know, it's this great reveal. And I remember it being really well written in the book and really liking it. So I think that you have to do catfishing, right?
Yeah.
Because that's going to happen. Nobody... is going to represent themselves as, like, in the book, Parzival says that his avatar is just kind of a little tweaked version of himself. It largely looks like him, you know? I'm not trying to fake anyone out or whatever. Yeah, right. Okay. He would look like Arnold. So, I think you kind of have to do catfishing. And I think that the reason that H does it makes a lot more sense. It's more honorable. But when we meet this H, Lena Waithe has a air of confidence about her that I think is counter to the character that I read.
Okay.
Because in the book, she is very insecure. And that is why Lena Waithe seems like the type of person who would be like, no, I am who I am. I'm going to be myself. Deal with it. Right. And in the book, it's like, my parents didn't really accept me as I was. And so when they were casting, I really thought that they probably should have got Precious. I don't know the actress's name, but she played Precious in the film Precious.
Yeah. No,
and
I know
I
who
felt
you're talking
like
about. Yeah.
That was more apt. Like, she could have that softer side that's to say, you know, a little more insecure about things. But in this movie, in the real world, H is actually kind of a badass. You know,
yes.
And in the book, I didn't feel that as much.
No, I get that. Have you ever engaged with MMO games? Like, were you a Warcraft guy?
Very
or
little. Like, I never could get locked in.
Gotcha. So, like, when you're playing video games, any sort of video game that has a character creator, are you the sort of person that makes your character that try to make it look like yourself or an idealized version of yourself, or do you go for something completely different?
It depends on the game, right? So I remember, like, when the Guitar Hero and the Rock Band games came out where you could create your character, I always tried to go a little realistic, maybe a little thinner than I am in real life, but generally speaking, same hair color, eyebrows, all that stuff. And if I'm playing a sports game and I'm creating my own character, I generally try to make it look like a nicer version of myself. If I'm playing something fantasy-wise, I usually either play a female character or I go batshit. Right. Like, I've got a damn ox on my head and I'm
right.
Got sneakers in the forest. And, like, usually that's kind of the realm I live in.
Cool. I never make it look like myself. Never.
Yeah.
My default is to try to use the character designer to create my wife. And I run around. I mean, my wife has been through Fallout. She's been through Saints Row 3 or 4, or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, that's typically what I do. So when people see me represented online, it is absolutely not at all who I am, which is interesting. I did play Warcraft I went through a period of probably 6 months where I was really into it. And then finally I went on vacation and realized, like, holy shit, I'm spending way too much time on that. I need to stop. And so I stopped. And I've done DC Universe Online. I had a similar experience. I was really into it for like 6 months. And I was like, oh, no, too much. Like, they get their hooks in me pretty good.
Yeah.
But I somehow gather the wherewithal to, like, stop. You know, I just cold turkey it. But I have been in those games enough to, like, have established relationships with people who I don't know in the real world, right?
Right.
Like, I've joined clans and, you know, gone questing with people, you know, like, set up times to meet online so we could go and do stuff and so on. And it's interesting. It's interesting how you do form those relationships with people that you've never met, you don't really know much about,
right?
Like I've done
with podcasting.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, let's be real, you and I have never met in real life, right? Like, we and outside of the context of this podcast and discussing when we're going to record and what movie we're watching,
we don't ever grab a beer together.
Yeah, it's not like we, like, super socialize, you know. So we chat a bit before, we chat a bit after, but that's it. Like, our relationship is primarily online.
You can listen to the whole thing.
And it's this, yeah. And you know, like, I have other relationships that are similar, you know, like the Gaming Nexus site. There are guys on there that I have never met. And like, some of them, I don't even know what their voices sound like because we've never talked, right? And I would say some of those friendships that I have with them are very close, you know, like very close friendships that have been going on for years, and we've never seen each other in the real world, right? So I think that's an interesting aspect of this movie, how it kind of portrays that and how people are able to make human connections, you know, long-lasting human connections through the filter of technology, and how they might represent themselves as maybe different from how they are on the day to day, and then get kind of trapped in this situation where they feel like they have to stay that, you know, like it becomes almost uncomfortable to reveal your reality when somebody perceives you a certain way that is maybe in your mind better than you really are, you know.
That's why I opt for worse, right? Like, I was, when you see me, I weigh about 800 pounds. I don't, you know, but I'm tubby, you know, so that way you're not disappointed. Like, I've never actually set up a dating profile online, but if I did, it would be the most normal, if not deprecating, one I could do. Because if I ever had, like, set up, I wouldn't want them to be like, oh, God, no. Like, I'd want you to go in with pretty low expectations.
Right. I'm so terrified of online dating. Like, I don't know. My wife and I have been together for almost 20 years, and I wouldn't know the first thing about how to represent myself on those things. Like,
My wife was my first girlfriend. Like,
right?
I nailed it first time. So, like, I've never had to set up a dating profile. I just thought it'd be like, if I ever did, It would be full on. Here's my gut. This is like, you're getting all of it.
Here's
because
my gut.
You need to know already what you're getting into.
Right. That's fantastic. So in case you hadn't noticed, we've transitioned into the questions now. Do you think the Oasis is possible?
Yes. I think within a reasonable margin, the metaverse is a thing, right? I mean, I think that's gonna happen.
Kind of.
Now, do I think it will take over in the same way? No. Not unless they find a way to make VR less encumbering.
Yes.
I think that VR is uncomfortable to use for longer than an hour.
Yes.
Like, my brother had it. He's like, dude, it's gonna be the future. I'm like, cool, and I play for like 30 minutes, and then the appeal wears off.
Like, agreed.
And then, but what's going to keep you going? And so I think in a lot of ways that social media kind of already is the Oasis, but I just, as far as it taking over our economy and becoming this large where it's the thing, I don't know, right? Like, the closest thing I think we have to it is Facebook, where it's, oh, you don't have a Facebook? like where you're a weirdo if you're not on it, which I'm not. I'm a weirdo and it's fine. I like it. It's
me too.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Get
happy
off
about
of Facebook.
It. Yes.
And I just kind of like, I think it's possible there's something that level of detail and open worldness and you can travel to other planets. Like if they did like a, what's that one? No Man's Sky in VR, I think would be really cool. But until they find a way where it's just a pair of glasses you slip on as opposed to a giant visor, and you got to have sensors around your room and all that shit. I don't think it'll stick until we can get to the point where it's comfortable to use.
Yeah, I think some of the tech is already there, right? Like haptic suits exist. They're not as good as they are in the movie, but they exist.
The haptic suits. Let's talk about this real quick.
Wait.
Okay, you got a question for later. Okay,
no,
I'll stop.
No,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Talk about the haptic suit. Go ahead.
No, well, all right. Like, I get a bit of it, right? Like, you want to feel a little... It's like the rumble in your controller when you're playing a first-person shooter. You want that feedback. But you don't want it to kick you in the balls.
Right.
Why is that... Like, maybe... Like, I get, like, if you want it where you can have virtual sex, right? Where
it's for sexy time. For sure, for sexy time, yes.
Right. But why are you got it in there where it can kick you in the nuts? Like, it can massage without punching you in the balls.
Yeah, yeah. The haptics in the movie are a little much. Like, I don't want to feel it when I get shot all that much either. Like,
Ben
I'll take
Mendelsohn
a little tap, but I don't want to fly across the room.
Exactly. When Ben Mendelsohn goes to the final battle... After he gets kicked in the balls, he removes the cup and hands it. Why not just take that off?
Right.
Right? You know, like, I can understand the benefit of having, I'm being shot from behind. I can turn around and take care of that. But there's no reason to have a ball cup.
No. No, you're not going into sexy time when you're fighting at Mount Doom or whatever the fuck they're doing.
I feel
yeah.
like his password being Bossman69.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Okay. All right.
I thought it was appropriate to the character, I should say.
Yeah.
Now, I was saying that, like the VR tech, like, it's, like, haptic suits exist, and multi-directional platforms you can walk on, they exist. Like, I have a buddy who has this, like, weird contraption in his basement, which looks like a little trampoline, and then he, like, puts on this crotch harness that suspends him from the ceiling, and then can walk around in Elder Scrolls, you know, online. So, like, that stuff is there. I do think that the VR tech obviously needs to get better. It needs to stop making people nauseous. It needs to not be uncomfortable. It's funny what you said about, you know, you play for 30 minutes or an hour, and then you're done, right? Like, I'm a VR guy. I have a Quest 2, and I've got a PSVR and a PSVR 2, and, like, I enjoy it. But, like, trying to communicate to somebody that doesn't use VR, like, people bitch about how short the games are, and it's like, no. I want it to be short. Like, I don't want to have this big, long, ongoing experience. Like, I want something that I can get through before the pressure marks on my head become unbearable,
right?
You know? Like, I want to get in, have a good time, and get out. Ride my roller coaster, get the fuck out. Like, I always compare it to having Disney World in your living room, right? You go in, you ride a ride, you go, "Ooh, that was fun," and then you go back home. And so, yeah, it would definitely need to...
Like, my favorite things were not the gaming elements. Like, I find that it's not as accurate as I would like for a game. Like, as someone who plays a lot of games, I like my controls to be accurate. But I really like a tour of a city, right?
Yes.
Like, you can go around and look at the city and turn your head and it feels like you're there. Or there was one my brother had me play where I look down and I'm on top of a building and, you know, and the things change around you as you look around. I appreciate those sorts of things.
Yeah,
and
experiential things, yeah.
Yeah, they don't need to be longer than an hour because I'm going to be like, that's enough.
Yeah, Beyond the Titanic, like, that's a good one. I have one where it's like, see the different things in the universe at scale, right? So you see the Earth, and then you see the sun next to the Earth, and then you see the solar system, you know, with the Earth all little tiny, you know, and you can say, okay, and here's our sun, and here's what, like, the biggest stars are like, and it shows our little tiny sun next to it. Like, that sort of thing, things where there's, like, scale and so on, that's the sort of thing that I like. And when I'm playing VR games, I much prefer strategy games where I'm sitting up above my little toys, and then I can pick up my toys and move them around. Yeah. I don't like holding a gun and running through and shooting people. Like, that's not what I'm in it for. I'm much more like, I've got this map and I can send tanks down these tracks and like shoot helicopters over at the other guy over there and watch him get fucked up. Like, that's more what I'm into it for.
I think a Minecraft VR would be a lot of fun. You know?
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Before you go to your next question, I have one.
Yeah.
If you meet Artemis in the real world, are you going to be able to get over that grotesque thing on her face?
What?
Oh, God, it made me. That's one of the stupidest things in this movie. Like, she's like, okay, Olivia Cooke, already an attractive woman. And she has a slight color discoloration, a birthmark on her face. And he's like, oh, look at Parzival. He's not shallow at all. He's like, doesn't bother me. I'm like, what? What if she had like half a face? Let's see what happens then. You know, like,
right.
He's out at that point. You know what I mean? Like,
the thing on her face is like so minimal.
And
you're right.
Even,
like,
yeah.
What if she had like a Michael Jackson missing nose or like,
now,
like
it's
just
right
crazy...
out of the book. It's not the movie's fault necessarily, other than that they kept it, but it is in the book. And it's pretty much described as, oh, she's just got this slight little, like, he even minimizes it before he meets her because he hacks her computer and gets a picture or whatever because he's a creeper. But, yeah, just.
Yeah, a little strawberry mark. I mean, it is played in a way where, like, she is self-conscious about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, even though it is, in our eyes, like. A minimal
I've lived with it my
thing.
Whole life. You don't have to pretend. And I'm like, what? Like, really? I don't know. I just.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it. Like, everybody has their physical imperfections, right? And everybody has their insecurities about those physical imperfections. And
yeah.
So I don't want to, like, minimize what it must be like to have a thing
Fine.
On her face. But I will say. He's no hero for being able to
right.
overlook it.
Like, it had her face been in a chipper shredder, and then he's like, you know what? I'm still good. I love you for who's inside. Then it'd be different.
Right, right. It's funny.
It's like, okay, I talk about the show Love is Blind briefly, and I watch it, but the cast is always so good-looking on that show. Just once, I want someone who's got a heart of gold, and it just looks like shit. And then like, they reveal, and we'll show you that love isn't blind. Like, it just, I don't know.
Big goiters like, sticking out of their necks. Yeah.
It's annoying. I don't know why I find it annoying. Anyway, moving on. Your turn. Ask a question.
Last thing in this slot just occurred to me as we were coming online, and I typed it out real quick. And this is it. This is a prequel to The Matrix. That's all I got. That's what I typed. This is a prequel to The Matrix. And then let me explain, like, what my thought pattern was here, right? Like, we have a population already sublimated into living in a virtual world and ignoring the real one, right?
Right.
It's obviously powered by some pretty serious AI. And, like, AI strong enough that there can be a representative manifestation of the guy who invented it that can behave and converse in a realistic way, right? So, like, what, how big of a leap is it for them just to be like the machines wouldn't even have to fight, right? Like, these people wouldn't even know it was happening to them. They would, like, the machine would just creep up behind them while they have their VR visors on and just go chunk and stick a fucking electrode into the back of their heads. Game over, man. They're in the Matrix now, you know, and probably really happy to be there because the outside world is shit. And now we don't have to stop to eat or poop anymore. You know, like, hooray. Yay. Yeah. We're in the Matrix.
I'd happily live in the Matrix. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fine. Who cares? I think about it because in the sequel of the book, Ready Player Two, they have these helmets that essentially lock them into that world.
Right, I forgot
and
about
so
that. Yeah,
it kind of is like, again, kind of going right where you're going with this is the prequel to The Matrix, which I could totally see. And like you said, they'd be happy to be there.
Yeah, Yeah, I just the other thing that kind of strikes me is like when you have something like the Oasis that is really dependent on user created content, right? Like in the book, people are off making their own planets and creating their own adventures and so on and so forth. There are going to be some pretty twisted, fucked up areas of the Oasis.
Oh, for sure.
Right? Like, real messed up. Like, look at like what's going on in AI right now. Like, some dude immediately goes in and is like, hey, I want you to take over and destroy humanity. You know? And then, like, they write an article about how it tried to do it. You know? Like, it tried to reach out to other AIs and figure out how they connect to work together and take over the internet. Like, and like, people immediately go for like the shittiest possible way that they can fuck this nice thing up, you know? Because it's why we can't have nice things.
Oh, it'd be the first thing on the Oasis.
Oh,
like,
for
history
sure.
has shown us, like, the earliest adopters of new technology has been the porn industry since, like, the beginning of, like, the first people to do, like, DVDs, let's get on it. It's the porn industry. And so, like, at the very least, porn sites will be all over the Oasis.
Oh, for sure. And, like, Auschwitz Planet. And, like, just really shitty.
Oh, yeah, there'd be a 4chan of the Oasis, for sure.
The Hotel Rwanda Planet. You know, like, just, like, the shittiest, most fucked up, crazy, like, beyond horror movie, real world atrocities. You know, let's live through the fun of, you know, whatever horrible, nightmarish thing humans have done to each other. Like,
right.
I could just, the Oasis would have some pretty dark corners, I would say, or, you know, huge swaths of places where normal people would not want
to go.
That's
like the internet today. I'm very careful about where I allow my computer to take me. There's things I don't want to see. I just don't want to see. And a lot of them aren't even illegal, and I don't want to see it.
Oh, yeah. You know? Like, yeah. Early internet, back in the AOL days, like, there was this fascination with, like, who can find the grossest shit and put it up online, you know, like, dead people and murder victims and stuff like that. And I learned very quickly, like, once that shit is in your psyche, you can't get it back out.
Which there are things that I've avoided. I've never seen Two Girls, One Cup. You know, I've never, there are several of those things where I can't trust anyone to be like, hey, check out deliciousoup.com. Because I already know deliciousoup.com is going to be someone eating out of the toilet. You know, it's just going to be something you can't unsee. And so I don't.
I've never heard,
like,
of deliciousoup.com.
I don't know. I just made it up.
I wish you hadn't have told me, because now there's one more thing for me to resist.
I don't know that it's a real thing. I just made that up. But
I remember Lemon Party back in
I've
the
heard
day.
That was, one, and that then was, Meat Spin was one.
God, and, stop naming them. No.
Oh,
stop.
All right,
go ahead. You can name
them. No, I don't know anymore. It's fine.
Okay, good. It's probably why.
My favorite, actually, the parts of those I did enjoy was watching reaction videos.
Yeah.
Someone would be like, Grandma, watch this.
Watch.
Blah!
Two Girls, One Cup. It's the Two Girls, One Cup planet in the Oasis.
Oh, Lord.
Come on,
Timmy. Just a vomit-covered floor. Okay, we've gone too blue. We're out of control.
Oh, shit. That is fucking great. Come on, Spielberg. Make that movie.
You know, God. Besides
next film. Next film by Steven Spielberg.
No, you just Rob Zombie will do it. Don't worry.
Oh, good times. Good times. All right. So what do we got? What do we got coming
up
next?
We're in the home stretches. Next is the West Side Story, a musical. I believe the only musical from Steven Spielberg. Mark will be joining us from the Movie Draft House. We'll have a good time. We'll hopefully, after talking about Ready Player One, I don't think I hate it as much now that we've talked through it. I still don't like it, and there's still a lot of cringe. We didn't even get into Simon Pegg and the whole quarter thing.
Oh, yeah. No,
where he gets
get
the extra
that.
Life.
Yeah.
Because in the book,
he plays Pac-Man,
he plays a perfect run of Pac-Man and gets this quarter by chance or skill or whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're done. Doesn't matter. No more Ready Player One. I never have to watch it again.
Oh, I'm totally going to watch it again. I didn't even watch my 3D Blu-ray version, so I think when I show the kids, I'm going to set it up and do it.
Really?
Well, like... the screen thumps. So, like, I got a sound system out there and it just rumbles the house, and my wife wasn't feeling well. And so I was like, you know, I'm just going to watch this on the TV with headphones. So,
okay. That's fair enough. Yeah. West Side Story next. As we approach the end of the season, we'll just kind of say what we're planning. Of course, we'll do West Side Story, then Fablemans on the 21st. On the 28th, we're going to release a bonus episode of us just kind of recapping the season. That will take us into July. Now, I haven't set in stone when season 3 is going to start yet. I was kind of thinking about like a 2-week break maybe, and then come back with season 3, which is M. Night Shyamalan.
Which I'm super excited for.
Now, we had talked about how we're going to... I think what I'm going to do is change the name of the podcast to Chronologically, : the director name.
And I think that's... Yeah.
And then just rotate that out. So the podcast is Chronologically, M. Night Shyamalan. And
I think
just
that's
rotate
probably,
that
yeah.
out.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Anyway, you don't have to worry about it. If you're subscribed, it's just going to stay where it is. You're good.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the next two movies, which are going to be new experiences for me. And, yeah, psyched. Psyched to move on to the new thing. Psyched to wrap up Spielberg. Proud to have almost gotten through a thing
and
completed
it. It's a nice thing when, like, I go on to Hitchcock billboards or Reddits, and I was like, someone was like, I've never seen a bad Hitchcock movie. I said, let me help you out. You know, like if someone were like, Spielberg's never made a bad movie. 1941. Here you go. You know,
it's just nice to be able to put a stamp on something. And
I've
say,
seen
boom,
them all.
I've done it. Boom. Yeah.
And then we should say when whatever the next Spielberg comes out, because it's not a big deal with Hitch because he's dead. We're never going to see another Hitch movie unless that one lost movie, The Mountain Eagle, somehow surfaces, then I'll rewatch it or watch it for the first time. But we'll be back like periodically whenever he drops a new one and just keep going with all the different directors we've developed relationships with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Super fun. Good project.
Well, if you want to get in touch with Eric, you can do so at Eric_Hotter on Twitter. You can check out his YouTube page, Eric Hotter. You can go to gamingnexus.com, check out all his gaming reviews. You can find me on Twitter at Podcast by Jeff. Check out the movie Draft House. And I guess that's it now. Everything else is done. So just go check out the movie Draft House wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you in 2 weeks for West Side Story.
Thanks, y'all. Bye.